This segment of the podcast is sponsored by Traveling Nice Experiences, here to help you create new memories one experience at a time. Contact Traveling Nice Experiences at www.travelingniceexperiences.com to book your summer 2021 travel. Once again, that's www.travelingniceexperiences.com. We're ready to help you create your next memorable experience.
Previously on the What a Word podcast.
People are beginning, I think, in spite of the Delta variant, to feel optimistic. And I hope that more and more people take all the necessary precautions, all the preventive steps that can be taken. I'm trying not to use the word vaccination, Ryan. but I hope that people who are vaccinated know that they're in a much better place, and those who are not vaccinated realize that they're in danger. And whether they get vaccinated or not, they ought to recognize that COVID-19 isn't taking prisoners, and it's not pulling punches. It doesn't matter what your faith is, how strong it is, this thing will take you out, and you will leave a lot of people in a lot of pain and a lot of darkness. And so whoever hears this from whatever zip code, this is not the season to gamble, and take good care of yourself, and we will get beyond this. I truly believe that we are getting out of it, and we will get out of it.
You are listening to the What a Word podcast, an interview style podcast where guests bring their unique experiences and insight on culture, life's challenges, and faith. Each episode is seasoned with words which will inspire and encourage. Now here is your host, Ryan Sharp.
Welcome to the What a Word podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Sharp. I've said it time and time again, I have listeners who are engaged, and you reached out to me during the past couple of weeks, and you know, I didn't get to respond to every message. whatawordpodcast@gmail.com is my email. I also have an Instagram page, What a Word Podcast, and you can reach me there as well. Some of you reach out to me on the WhatsApp page, which is just my name. Listen, I got you. I hear you loud and clear, and I took care of it. We had some anxious parents, caregivers, and guardians. And they said, Ryan, listen, man, we need help. And I didn't get to respond to everyone, but I took care of it. I think you'll be happy. I got Dr. Tasha Brown with me. And she's no stranger to the podcast. You remember I brought her on last season, and she addressed the issue of talking to your child and adolescent about racial trauma. And she took care of that. She gave us a framework, and she's busy. She works full-time at a university. She also has a private practice. Dr. Tasha Brown is a licensed clinical psychologist in the state of New York, who specializes in providing clinical care to children, adolescents, and young adults. She's passionate about helping the children, adolescents, young adults, and families she works with function adequately at home, school, and in their communities. And she gets excited when her clients are able to incorporate skills learned in treatment into their daily lives. Dr. Brown prides herself in being able to provide client-centered care with a strength-based approach. But guess what Dr. Tasha Brown also did? She came out with a mental health checklist for your child. And she's going to tell you ways to get it, to follow the journey. She has an upcoming program on September 27th that you don't want to miss. But to my listeners, my engaged listeners, I told you I got you. And I think you'll be happy with our conversation today. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Dr. Tasha Brown, to the What a Word podcast. Welcome, Dr. Brown. Thanks for coming back.
I'm excited to be back, especially to talk about back to school. Thanks for having me. We were just talking, it's been over a year, which I really can't believe, but thank you for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
Indeed. And so much has happened since we last spoke, and I am thankful that you were gracious enough to accept the invitation on short notice as well to come back to share what I believe is pertinent information for students and parents and caregivers. I took a special interest in the back to school checklist, and I wanted to ask you, there are individuals who, and reasonably will say, children are resilient. Doc, why did you put together a back to school checklist for your child's mental health?
Because children are resilient. For that exact reason. Yes, I believe that children are super resilient. And as the adults in their lives, we need to provide them with the tools and the resources to help them be resilient. And so I put together the checklist because for a couple of reasons. I work with a lot of children and adolescents and parents, and in preparing to go back to school, I'm hearing a lot of the same things that are coming up. So anxiety about being back in the building, there are some kids in kindergarten and first grade who have never, they are in first grades or second grade, they've never been in a school building. And so this year, although it's back to school, this year looks very different than years in the past. And so I felt that is really important to put together. Here is a checklist of different things to be thinking about as you prepare your child or your children to go back to school, keeping in mind, like, yes, you want them to be prepared academically, but you also want them to be prepared emotionally for what this school year has to bring, which none of us know right now. But as much as possible, how can we prepare children and adolescents for this brand new school year with so many different moving pieces?
Powerful. How do we prepare our children? And I'm using the word generally because the audience here could be caregivers, they could be guardians, they could be parents of various ages. How do we prepare them for the COVID-19 safety protocols, which seems voluminous. Mm-hmm. And depending on where you go to school, it could be stringent or it could be very loose.
I have students, or I work with children who go to school all across the state of New York, and their rules are drastically different depending on the type of school that they go to. So I talk to parents about preparing your kid in terms of like the COVID safety protocol in two different ways. Number one, you need to be well versed on what the school's safety protocols are for COVID-19, and then what your in-home safety protocols are, because very often those things don't line up. And sometimes they do, and it's beautiful that they do, but sometimes they don't. So number one, talking to your kid, your child, about like, what is it that we do in this house? So as a family, we are or are not committed to continuing wearing our mask. We are or are not going to continue using our hand sanitizer. We're still not visiting people's houses. We're still staying away from church for now. Like, what are you doing in your specific household to take care of making everyone feel safe around COVID-19. If your family's getting vaccinated, having conversations about why you're doing that. If you're not, having conversations about why you're doing that. So your child is aware of the conversation and the stance that the family is taking.
because when they go to school, they're going to be around children and other adolescents whose families have so many differing views, and you just don't know what they're going to kind of get into. And then being really well-versed around what the COVID-19 safety protocols are at your child's school. I've heard so many differences in what is happening. So I think across New York State, everyone has to wear a mask. So that's pretty standard. Differences come in with testing. So there's some schools that are randomly testing a group of kids every week. I know that there's some schools that require students to get tested every 3 days. There's some schools that if one child is exposed in the classroom, that whole classroom has to quarantine. Some schools that are saying like, no, the classroom doesn't have to quarantine. So being very well-versed about what it is happening at school and not just leaving it up to the teacher or the principal or whoever at school to explain it to your child, but having that conversation at home. So, all right, at school, like this is what they said it's going to be, and have that conversation with your child at home so that you, the caregiver, can answer any questions that your child might have about that. So for example, if you are a family that says like, you know what, we don't really wear masks all the time, but they're at school and the school is saying you cannot take your mask off, that's a discrepancy for your child. And so having that conversation with them is going to be really important. If you are a family and everyone is vaccinated and they go to school and their friend is saying, well, my mom said that you shouldn't get vaccinated because X, Y, and Z, that's a discrepancy for your child. And so you want to be there to have that conversation with your child and answer any questions that they might have. And it's going to be a continued conversation because we know that the protocol might be one thing today and tomorrow we might make up and it be a completely different thing. So just continue to make that a conversation that happens and is ongoing.
It's a real anxious time. For students and parents, caregivers, mm-hmm. How do we have the conversation about thoughts and feelings without making our children even more anxious?
Letting them lead the conversation. So yeah. I love that question. How can we do that without placing our own anxieties, our own worries, our own apprehension? Is let your child lead the conversation. And the way you let your child lead the conversation is by open-ended question. So how do you feel about going back to school? That's it. And let your child take it from there. And if they say, oh, okay, whatever, I'm okay with it. Letting your child lead the conversation does not then look like saying, well, you must be worried because COVID and you haven't been there for a while. If they said that they're feeling okay with it and you're not noticing any signs of them feeling anxious or worried, I would leave it there. By you just asking, how are you feeling about the new school year? You're opening up the space to let your child know or your adolescent know that this is a space where I can have a conversation about my feelings and thoughts about school. So having the conversation in a way and recognizing that this conversation is for you to get an idea of what your child is feeling. And the only way that you're going to do that is by giving them the space to tell you without your input and your own anxieties and worries being placed on them. And that's hard to do because we're all feeling a little bit like, ooh, everything's opening back up. Kids are back in school. There's a lot to think about. So many children, that's 30 different families in one room. And so I'm pretty sure, and I know for a fact that parents, caregivers, grandparents, aunties, uncles, like the people are teachers are concerned. And we have a responsibility for our children to really think about how can we best support them and give them the space to manage their own anxieties and worries and apprehensions without having to also manage ours.
Are we being more flexible with the expectations for the school year in terms of behavior and academic achievement in light of all of that's happening?
Flexibility is the year. So your child has missed instruction And so that's number one. Online learning, as much as teachers did it and rocked it out and did the best that they could, thank you to the teachers of America and of the world, really, they missed some instruction. And there are some other things that happen in a school building that I think we take for granted. So at school, children learn how to do simple things like line up, walk to the cafeteria with your friends, sit in the lunchroom, go up for lunch without getting into an argument with anyone, social interactions, being around different kids, moving from adult to adult if they're in a middle school or high school and they have multiple teachers. They haven't had that for over a year. And so we have to be flexible with children and our expectations of behavior and academics, because it's going to be an adjustment period. And it's not fair for us as adults to say, okay, you're back to school, we need this level of excellence. And I'm putting my hand like all the way up here, like everyone can see me. We have to say, we need you to get acclimated to what it means to be operating in a school building like this again. And then we can talk about what the expectations are. And yes, you have general expectations in your household, like you need to be respectful. We want you to try your best. Like, I'm not saying get rid of all your expectations, but if your child who previously didn't have any behavioral difficulties or emotional difficulties at school starts to come home and is having a little bit of trouble, I think some, what I've been saying to parents is like, that's not surprising. And not also not too, you should be worried, but not too worried, because kids are going to need time to adjust. So be flexible in your expectations and be flexible in your approach to how you deal with some of these things. So sometimes I know it's like, okay, no, like you have to come home with straight A's. Like there's no wiggle room around that. And if your child has missed a whole year of academic instruction or has gotten bits and pieces of it because they weren't able to focus fully in virtual learning, and now they're popped in a math class where they're expected to build on what they learned in the last year, but they don't have all the blocks to get there, it's understandable that they're going to be struggling. And so if they come home and the parent is having this really hard approach, it leaves no room for saying, okay, what can we do to get you to where you need to be? Or where are you needing extra support? And the same thing with behavior. So be flexible, be patient. I'm saying, like, let's give kids until January to like settle in completely.
Wow.
Because our teachers need to settle in, principals, everyone in the building is going to be doing this readjustment. Teachers are now having students come into their classroom who there's going to be varying levels of academics. So if half of the class did virtual learning last year, the other half was doing like a mixed hybrid model, you're having kids come in with so many different varying levels of where they are academically. And so teachers are gonna be adjusting. And so let's give everyone some time to readjust and be patient, because that's what is going to be best in the long run for your child's mental health.
Powerful. So most students will have a new teacher. Some will have a new school and a new teacher active. Or what should parents be doing in terms of connecting with the new teacher?
Yeah, this is going to vary by age level. So if you have a school age child, so I would say like preschool to sixth, eighth grade, depending on where you live. And they have like one consistent teacher that you know, like this is going to be the home base, I would reach out as soon as possible and introduce yourself to that teacher. And I know that this is not a common practice, because it's like, okay, I'll eventually meet the teacher in October at parent teacher conferences, or I'll see them or I'll look at their emails. But it's going to be important for you to have a relationship with your child's teacher, especially as they transition back into the new school year. Because if they're having excess anxiety, if they are really struggling academically, if they need some emotional support, teachers are more likely to say, you know what, let me reach out to so-and-so's parent because there's this already this development, this relationship that's being developed. And it doesn't need to be an exhaustive email. It's just like, hey, good morning. My name is Mrs. or Mr. So-and-so. My child X, Y, and Z is going to be in your class. Just wanted to introduce myself to you. These are the best ways to contact me if you have any concerns. We're looking forward to the school year. Some parents like to throw in a little bit about their child. We participated in all virtual learning last year, so this is going to be his first time back in the classroom since March of 2019. Something to just establish the relationship. Because that goes a long way in how you're going to communicate with your child's teacher throughout the year. And you want to be as close to the ground as possible in terms of getting your child the resources and help that they need if it comes to that. And in working in a school building, kind of not in like an educational role, but in a mental health behavioral support type of role, I think there are differences in how, I think we just have to be honest about it. There's differences in how school admin and sure. how teachers speak and communicate with parents. And what it comes down to a lot of times is relationship. And the parents who have a relationship with sure. the school staff mm-hmm. get different types of communication. And so communicating with your child's teacher. For high schoolers and junior high, that becomes a little bit more difficult because number one, you want to start giving your child some space and some independence. And so emailing all their teachers might not, I honestly would not suggest that unless your child has, your high schooler or junior high schooler needs a certain level of support. I wouldn't suggest that, but encourage your child to do that. So have a conversation with, how can you introduce yourself to your teachers? How can you get to know your teachers this year? Especially because it might be a big adjustment for you and for them. Like, what can you do as a student to get to know and support your teachers? And as a parent, making sure you're showing up to parent-teacher conferences, open house school nights, or whatever they're offering, making sure that you are showing up to the best of your ability. And if you can't be there, hey, I missed this. What was the recap? Or can I have the highlights? Or can we set up another time? Because this is the year that you want to make sure that you are as in tune with what's happening in your child's school as much as possible.
Are you enjoying the What a Word podcast and want to learn how to share it with others on social media? It's easy. Go on your favorite podcast app, find the What a Word podcast, and hit share. Please remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss any episodes. And if this podcast has encouraged or inspired you, then please consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find us easier. Thank you.
To a parent, we'll readily admit that the tablet saved us during the heights mm-hmm. of the pandemic and saved us even more during the summer. Mm-hmm. Is it too late now to start the morning and evening routine as recommended by a good Dr. Tasha Brown?
No, I'm all about morning. That's all I talk about all day for the last 3 weeks is make a morning routine and make a nighttime routine. Children thrive on routines. And the routine in your house is going to be looked very different than the routine in your neighbor's house, than in that person's house. It doesn't matter what the routine is, as long as it's a routine and something that is predictable and happens every single day in somewhat of the same order, so that your child can be, number one, getting the right amount of sleep that they need to be functional the next day, and also doing the things that's going to be helpful in getting them mentally prepared for the the day. So in the nighttime, I really suggest for some kids, you might need a homework routine and then like a bedtime type of routine. Some children can like handle getting their homework done without like the super structure of a routine. You know your child. And some kids, you can have like a looser type of bedtime routine depending on your child, but something that like, this is what we do every single day. Same thing in the morning. Like this is what happens every single day. That's going to set them up for success. It's going to be predictable. We live in a world that is so unpredictable right now. Things change every single minute. And that does not make kids feel safe. When things are as predictable and routine as possible, which is one of the reasons why things happen the same exact way every single day in the school building, is because that's a way that children feel safe. And so setting that up at home is going to be really important. And I always say that it's not for you, the parent, to just set up the routine and say, like, this is what it's going to be. Children participate more in routines and structure when they have been involved in creating it. So we are going to have a nighttime routine. Like, what do you think we should do first? Or what do you think we should make sure that we add on our morning routine so that they have some ownership of it? That makes them more likely to say like, okay, let me actually follow this because I participated in making it. It's not just my caregiver saying like, we do this, 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 and this, and this.
So we can reasonably expect that students will probably go down later than usual or than they should the first week of school and will have some difficulty getting up in the morning.
Yeah, which is why I suggest starting the routine like at least a few weeks before school starts. And by the time, like it's already September 7th where we're taping this. Right. So school has probably started for a lot of people around the country already, but start as soon as possible and then give time for adjustment. When some of the kids that I worked with over the pandemic, when they would tell me the time they went to bed, I was like, what? So everyone's routine was messed up. So we had teenagers.
We're just coping, you know?
Yeah. To waking up at 2 p.m. every single day. And so now to be expected, I met with this girl today. It was her first day back at school, her first day of high school. So brand new building, brand new school. Hasn't been in school in months, in over a year. And I was like, how were you? She was like, I'm so tired. She was like ready to like get off the session because she wanted to go take a nap because her schedule has been off. Like this is the first time in months that she's been expected to wake up early, go through the day without a nap.
Sure.
And then have like all of these demands. And so give your child time to adjust. Just like when you have jet lag, when you go to a new place and you need time to like adjust to the new environment, your child's going to need time to adjust to the rigor of a school schedule, even if it's something that they've done before. Going from the summer to school is hard in of itself. Then going from pandemic to post-ish pandemic is also going to be difficult. So give your child time to adjust to the schedule. They might be coming home extremely tired, or they might be wired. So who knows what you're gonna get. But when you establish a routine, it makes it easier for them to kind of fall into something instead of them trying to figure it out completely on their own.
So the open-ended questions you mentioned earlier, are we having those conversations throughout the year? And I ask that only because I'm wondering if the kids will have a sense that mommy and daddy and caregiver and guardian are a little anxious, but they're trying to play cool.
Mm-hmm. You know, I am all about setting up the norm that we ask about feelings. And so this may be the start of just, this is how we operate as a family. Sure. We ask like, how are you feeling about starting your new school? How are you feeling about going to visit your grandparents this weekend? How you feel about your new Sabbath school? Like it's I think establishing the norm of, we are going to talk about how you feel about certain things. And there's a way to kind of have that conversation matter of factly. It's sometimes the thought of talking about feelings is anxiety provoking. And a lot of times we don't ask about feelings until there's something wrong. We're not asking about how they're feeling about school because we anticipate that something's going to be wrong. We're asking because we want to know. And if by chance there's something wrong, we want to be able to address that. And if things are going great, we want to be able to applaud that and praise that and make sure that we can kind of think about ways to continue to make sure that things go well. And so as caregivers, as adults, like stepping back and saying and changing our mindset a little bit, we're not asking because we're worried. We're asking because we're trying to set up an environment where we talk about how we're feeling about things that may or may not be difficult. And the more you do it, the more your child gets used to this is just the conversation. If your child is older and they've never heard you say, like, how do you feel about this? It might catch them off guard. But the more you do it, the more they recognize that this is an open-ended, like free type of conversation, the more it'll just become part of what your family does.
So I had a list early and I did a poll with a few parents, and many of them did what you suggested in terms of including the children in the back to school preparation, and many to a fault allowed their children to pick clothing that was a little more costly because that's what the child wanted, and that's how they found, you know, community. Is that normal, or is that a parent just overindulging?
You know, that is such an important conversation. The amount of parents that I've heard say that they are overindulging this year is more than I've ever heard. I think that there's a balance. And so including your child in preparation for the school year looks like a wide variety of things. It doesn't only look like including them in like back to school clothes shopping. It looks like including them in like, let's talk about what that after school routine is going to be. It looks like including them when you're thinking about, okay, we're thinking about like how pickup is going to work. This is what we're thinking. Like, what do you think about that? As much as you want to include, there's other ways to include. And then there is this, I think parents are feeling like bad and kind of like, oh, they've missed so much. I want to make sure that this is like a really good school year. And so setting some boundaries for yourself as a parent and caregiver in terms of like, how can we still allow our children to be, have their own agency and how they show up in the world in terms of their dress, and do it within our financial constraints. A lot of my patients this year also, more than ever, we've been having conversations about like how they want to like physically show up in the world in terms of like how they dress and how to navigate conversations with their parents about wanting to like switch around their wardrobe or just their identity in terms of how they're physically presenting. So these things are on your child's mind and very tied to your child's like self-esteem. And being in a new space where, and new meaning like a new school year, it might be the same school, but if you haven't seen these people for over a year and a half, it's basically a new space where kids sometimes are getting the unique opportunity to, for lack of a better word, like redefine themselves. For some students, having the ability to say like, hey, mom, dad, grandma, auntie, like I want to wear different types of shorts this year, that can have them show up very differently in a school building, or I want to wear my hair differently, or I want these sneakers. Like that changes how students interact in school buildings in ways that I don't think we put enough emphasis on. And at the same time, it's understandable for and realistic that parents and caregivers have to operate within what they can do. And so having a conversation with your child about, okay, I hear you in terms of how you want to show up. This is what we're working with. How can we work together to make us both kind of be satisfied here? Mm-hmm.
And so many of us didn't have the opportunity to prepare for what learning at home would involve. And for many students, I imagine they didn't have the setup in terms of where they would do classwork and have the meetings, et cetera. You seem to put some emphasis though on giving our children spaces where they have a predictable setup to do homework and classwork. Why the predictability? Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
Yeah, I talked a lot about this during quarantine also, is because we were working, schooling, socializing, sleeping, everything in like one space. This idea of like differentiating different spaces for different things within a home is like super important, or was super important during the pandemic. And I think it's a lesson that we can carry through. When children have like a designated space where they can do their work, they become more focused, they're more organized. It helps to kind of, if you're thinking about that routine, like split up the routine, like if you're sitting at your desk or you're sitting at this part of the table at this time, we know that you're doing schoolwork. Your papers are not all over the place. It kind of helps them feel focus. And for some kids, there are some kids where they need to like move around and have different places. You know your child, but really thinking about how you can have a space and a place where your child can focus and get work done or have school things done, because they're getting back in the flow of this. I go to school, I have homework. It's not a hybrid approach. There's a lot of relearning that needs to happen. And the more structured of an environment you allow for that, the more successful your child can potentially be. And it doesn't have to be like a full-blown set up beautiful desk area. It can be literally like when you do your homework, or when you read, or when you do what your teacher tells you to do after school, you sit at the kitchen table, or you sit at this spot in the living room. It doesn't have to be extravagant, but going back to the idea of consistent and predictable, as many things as consistent and predictable that we can put in place for children and adolescents right now, the better it will be for them.
There is a student, Dr. Tasha, who doesn't want to go back to school. They've been accustomed to the routine, being at home. They're fearful, they're anxious. And day one, week one is going to be very difficult, even without meeting the nice teacher who is waiting for them. What can parents do this first, second week, outside of what you've said to the child who is just like, I don't want to leave home?
Yeah, school refusal. We call that school refusal.
Yeah.
And pre-pandemic, school refusal is one of those things. If you get a group of like child psychologists in a room and you say, okay, we have like 5 school refusal cases, everyone's like, because they're some of the hardest things to treat is school refusal. Because when kids get to a certain age, you can't like pick them up and drag them. If they say they're not going and they like stay on the ground, like it's hard to physically move and get them to go to school. We don't know yet, but I'm going to be really curious about what the statistics are saying in terms of school refusal around January. I'm anticipating that we're going to see a lot more school refusal this year. And I think it's something realistically that we have to think about. And school refusal is when your child is refusing to go to school, or they're going to school, but they're refusing to participate. And a lot of times parents and caregivers conceptualize that as defiance. So they're not listening. They don't want to participate. They're just being defiant. And the one thing about school refusal that is so important in terms of how to deal with it is reconceptualizing what is happening. It's not defiance. Yes, they're refusing to go to school, and we should probably figure out a better term for it, but the literature calls it school refusal. There's something underlying why they do not want to go to school. And as a parent and as a caregiver who has a child who does not want to go to school, who's not participating in school, who's getting to school and crying so much that you have to go and pick them up, it's getting to the root of like, what is it? Is it that they're anxious? Is it that they are about like meeting new kids? Are they anxious about being around different adults? That they are feeling so overwhelmed with schoolwork that they don't want to go because now everything just seems way above their head? Is it that they're worried because they don't want to get sick? There's a plethora of reasons why kids refuse to go to school or give a hard time. And so figuring out like what that is by asking questions, asking the teachers, okay, what's happening when they get here, if they get that far? And then it's tricky because you don't want to get into too much negotiating with your child. I'm not a big fan of having like picking your child up. So if the school is calling over and over to say like, hey, come pick your kid up, come pick the, I always tell parents like, don't go. Because once you get in the habit of picking the child up, they're just not getting the opportunity to, they're not getting the opportunity to like, stay in the building and be successful. Or if you do have to go because your child really needs the support, what can you do as much as possible to keep them in the building? And kind of going back to the routine. Some kids might need a gradual, okay, you don't want to go to school. How about today? And this becomes hard with like work schedules and all. How about today? We just walk to the school building. These are extreme cases and sure. Call it a day. And then tomorrow or maybe 3 days later, how about we go sit in the classroom? I'll wait outside for a little bit. Or let's talk to the teacher about what they're doing or what they can do to accommodate the student. It's such a complex question because there's so many different reasons why children have school refusal. But I think what I'll leave the audience with is figure out what it is. And you're going to be frustrated that your child is refusing to go to school. Or you're getting calls to pick up your child. That is frustrating. And it's hard and it's difficult for every member of the family and for a parent or caregiver, the adult in the situation, taking a few steps back and regulating your own emotions so that when you are managing the situations, it's not just like go to school, like period. It's okay. Yes, it's understandable that you might be having some difficulties. How can we work together to get you to go to school feeling as comfortable and safe as possible?
And it leads me to, you know, our almost final question. The child asks the parent or the caregiver or the guardian, will I get sick?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a hard question because we don't know. There's these questions that we just don't. You want your child to feel safe and you want to send the message that the adults around them are doing everything in their capability to protect them. So that's the messaging that we want to send. Mm-hmm. And so in your answer to that question, going back to, I'm really a fan of being upfront. We don't know if you're going to get sick. We don't know if any of us are going to get sick. However, these are the things that we're doing in our house to keep everyone safe. These are the things that we know for a fact that your school is doing to keep everyone safe. And hopefully with all of those things, everyone will stay healthy. If not, so for say, for example, if someone does get sick, these are the things that we're going to do in our house to make sure that we're taking as much care of this person as possible. These are the things that the school is going to do if they hear that someone is sick. These are like going over those safety protocols.
Sure.
Because what children want to hear is that the people I trust, which are the adults, are doing things to make sure that I'm safe. Children start to feel unsafe and unsettled and anxious and worried about things, not when things go wrong, but when it seems like there's no plan or when there's no structure in terms of like how they're going to approach. The world of children could be falling apart, but if the adults around them are saying like, we're doing this, that helps them feel a lot safer than if everyone is just pulling for different things.
Sure. And finally, Doc, the growth mindset. I know that's what inspired the checklist. Could you share with listeners a little about the growth mindset?
Yeah, for children who, so mindset is like such an important thing. I'll start there. So mindset is so important. And a lot of the work that I do around kids and adolescents who, whether they're coming in for academic concerns, whether they're coming in for depression, anxiety, we spend a lot of time talking about their thoughts. We spend a lot of time talking about how they can restructure their thoughts. And so when we talk about a growth mindset, it's really when children believe that the opportunities that they have for them to like learn new things, that there are opportunities for them to like learn new things, for them to improve, for them to grow and learn through challenges, for them to build on skills. It's like, I know that I'm going to continue to learn and I'm going to continue to get better. Whereas kids with like a fixed mindset, it's like, okay, what I have now is what it is. It's either I have it or I don't have it. And we really want to encourage our children, especially now in this climate of schooling in the world, to have this growth mindset where they're is so much to learn. There's so much to do. There's so many different opportunities. And I, as a child or an individual, can position myself to like learn and do a lot of different things. And so ways that children have a growth mindset is through healthy mental health. And so we want to help our children get to this ability to have and sustain a growth mindset throughout their childhood, adolescence, and into adulthood. But we want to make sure that their mental health is intact. And I think going through these things that on the checklist and making sure that your child is as mentally healthy as possible is going to help them to have and maintain that growth mindset.
Dr. Brown, please tell listeners how to connect with you, get subscribed to the checklist and, you know, the fees that you send.
So I'll definitely share the direct link with you so you can post it along with how you're posting the things about the podcast. Also, you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Tasha Brown on Instagram and on Facebook. And there are direct links to that as well. On my website, drtashabrown.com, you can also just fill out a form and say, I would love to subscribe to the email list, and then you'll be automatically added. There's actually a space that like pops up that says like, join my community as soon as you go on the website. And that's a great and easy way to get onto the emailing list. Right now, up until probably like mid-October, once you join, you'll automatically get the back to school checklist. September 27th, I'm actually having like a back to school in your child's mental health for parents who are interested to come. And like as a group, we can talk about that. And so registration for that is going to open really soon, and you can get information about that through the email list. One of the great things is that I'm going to be talking about back to school for a while. And I know that some kids started school in August, but because we want to give children the time to transition, we're going to probably be talking about back to school, I would say, until like mid-October. And then we're going to be talking about, okay, now that kids are settled and we're hearing what's happening, we're going to have a lot more information. How can we now then help them manage and deal with what we're seeing after the transition time? So it's a continued conversation, and I would love to have as many parents join in on that conversation, whatever way works for you and your family, so that we can make sure our children are successful this school year.
Awesome, awesome. Dr. Tasha Brown is currently a licensed clinical psychologist at New York Presbyterian Hospital and is a faculty member at Columbia University Medical Center, where she serves as an instructor in the Department of Psychiatry. Dr. Brown is passionate and committed to providing children, adolescents, young adults, and their families with efficient, effective, evidence-based treatment. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast, and I believe We'll need to have you back at some point during the year as we address what we've discovered.
What we know, yeah.
It's pretty fluid, and I agree this must be a tough spot to be in to have to address what's unprecedented, you know, for us. It's commendable the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited about the continued conversation and just encouraging everyone, again, if you want a copy of the Back to School list, download it, sign up for the email address, and then share it. Don't share it, share it as much as you can because we want everyone to be prepared.
Thank you so much again, and blessings to you and your work, and hope to talk to you within the upcoming year again.
Thank you.
Most welcome.
I'm really a fan of being upfront. We don't know if you're going to get sick. We don't know if any of us are going to get sick. However, these are the things that we're doing in our house to keep everyone safe. These are the things that we know for a fact that your school is doing to keep everyone safe. And hopefully with all of those things, everyone will stay healthy. If not, so for say, for example, if someone does get sick, these are the things that we're going to do in our house to make sure that we're taking as much care of this person as possible. These are the things that the school is going to do if they hear that someone is sick. These are like going over those safety protocols.
Sure.
Because what children want to hear is that the people I trust, which are the adults, are doing things to make sure that I'm safe. Children start to feel unsafe and unsettled and anxious and worried about things, not when things go wrong, but when it seems like there's no plan or when there's no structure in terms of like how they're gonna approach. The world of children could be falling apart, but if the adults around them are saying like, we're doing this, that helps them feel a lot safer than if everyone is just pulling for different things.